Professors FM.
Hey, welcome everyone. Welcome to the Fanalytics Podcast, brought to you by the Emory Marketing Analytics Center. Your usual hosts, Mike Lewis and Doug Battle. Doug, NCAA tournament has concluded. Hey, I'll throw something at you right out the gate. Apparently, the women's championship game, 9.9 million viewers. The men's championship game, 12 and some change viewers. That is a dramatic change, my friend.
Oh my goodness, that's massive. I've been saying Caitlin Clark has the potential to change the game for women's basketball. She has captured such an audience. She is such a phenom. She's got that Steph Curry distance and
unlimited range.
I was kind of blown away by how everyone took sides with that tournament. Caitlin Clark became, just by default, the person everyone pulled for. Everyone hated LSU, it seemed, outside of the state of Louisiana, and felt like they were classless. And of course, that's been debated since. But I'm like, since when did we all have so much passion for women's basketball? They had that Fandom 101 NCAA Women's Tournament commercial, and it's like everyone watched it and said, okay, we're going to be fans now. Hey, thank you, Caitlin Clark.
She was like from central casting, right? I mean, the range on those shots. And look, Doug, my perspective will always be, I don't know fandom to anything, so I'm never going to feel bad if I'm not watching, I'm not watching hockey or I'm not watching women's basketball. But I don't recall seeing that kind of game a lot on the women's side in terms of that range. And then frankly, look, trash talking is an art, my friend, is an art. And I don't even know what some of... Doug, I mean, I don't know what that means, right? But it was awesome. And so you've got the best player on the floor taking these amazing shots and then trash talking. And look, that's the kind of magic. That's the kind of magic that actually starts to build those kind of lasting memories. Now, I'll say this. And the unfortunate thing is then we get to the championship game and we have LSU and Angel Reese is trash talking. But you know, quite frankly, Angel Reese isn't as likable as Caitlin Clark. And so suddenly then this goes to social media and it becomes a racial issue. Mm-hmm. And then 2 days later, it becomes a gender issue because men can do it. Doug, my two favorite trash talkers are Pat Bev and Caitlin Clark.
Okay. Right? Oh, well, I mean, Angel Reese has got to be up there. She was pretty ruthless during the championship game.
And but this is the magic of trash talking, right? There's almost got to be a twinkle in your eye when you're doing it.
See, it was just heartless.
She was mad, right?
Yeah, I know. When I saw the initial controversy, my first thought was, huh, that's kind of funny because when Pat Bev does it, people definitely receive it differently. I mean, people still hate that's the thing that gets lost here. I don't think this is much different than Pat Bev in the sense that Lakers fans, when he plays for the Lakers or Timberwolves or whatever team he's on at the time, I'm just thinking of famous instances of him, and he's on a different team like every week. The fans of his team think it's great. It's just sports. It's competitive. And the fans of the rest of the NBA say he's got no class and he's a bad example for kids, and that's bad sportsmanship. And that's exactly what happened here. I think LSU fans 100% are saying it's just basketball. It's a game. This is what competitors do. Caitlin Clark would do the same thing. And Caitlin Clark's come out and said the same thing, which is a new twist to the story. But I don't want to get caught up in the debate there as much as the fact that we're all talking about women's college basketball. Think about NIL. Like, we've seen with gymnastics how much money these girls are making. Someone was asking me, is Caitlin Clark going to come back for another year? I don't know the answer to that. But
I think in the women's side, you basically have to. The WNBA doesn't draft until year four.
Okay. Well, I didn't know that. Not the WNBA expert over here. But Mike, I know you've been in the draft room, the green room for the draft. But I do know that she will likely make just as much or not more money. I mean, that WNBA salary, I imagine hers will be very high relative to the average, but still.
You know, I don't know if there's a rookie scale, right? I mean, so it literally might be something like $60,000 out the gate or $70,000.
Yeah. So like, I mean, compared to what she's making and is going to make with her endorsement, she's going to be.
NIL plot twist, right? Certain female athletes are making, look, this is probably, this could be true for a lot of athletes, right? Does Stetson Bennett make as much money next year as he made this year? I said, plot twist in terms of NIL. Now, I will say this, Doug. And again, we always seem to end up kind of being, it starts with some great trash talking, right? And then becomes a political and a racial, like, and then a misogyny story.
It's like the articles are like, people who voted for this candidate think that this player's classless.
but for me, the thing that I'm interested in is, did that kind of spoil the moment? I mean, because it was a lot of fun. Like when she backed off that South Carolina player and was like, just shoot the ball, right? I mean, just this ruthless playground stuff. But then they kind of twisted it, and the story kind of went in some odd direction. Like, I saw there a video of Angel Reese and another one of the LSU players celebrating with the trophy, and they were sort of chanting, the price just went up. And it's like, I kind of feel bad because I don't even fully understand the trash talking. Are they talking about the NIL price going up? Is there some other reference?
It's what the kids say. Yeah, that's what I'm here for. That's my insight for today.
Now you got about 2 years left before we replace you with a 17-year-old.
It's what the kids say. Price went up. Yeah. It's like your stock's going up. Yeah. I also like Caitlin Clark. She's a phenom. She's going to be like female Steph Curry. I love it. I love how competitive she is. And I think that was like, I think the kind of rah-rah, like, oh, we're all having fun. Like, I think that hurts the image, and that the real gritty competitive nature of this captured such a wide audience. And it's like, people love that Mamba mentality, and these girls aren't doing windmill dunks, and they're not, I mean, it's a different product, but they can have an even better competitive spirit or equal level of competition as far as the taunting and just the will to win and that mentality. And that's what we saw. And I think that's what captured an audience. And I think that's going to be the key. I think the WNBA as a league has to look at this and be like,
but Doug, come back to a couple of things that happened. Look, this is a strange year for basketball because most of my memorable moments seem to be from the woman's side of the bracket. That is clearly never happened before. But we had, remember, who was it? The Louisville player got into a verbal tiff with the Texas player. Then who was it? Then there was another one where a player was assaulted in a handshake line. Then we had the best trash talking of all of college basketball from player from the University of Iowa. And then some massive trash talking. You could say that the women's tournament was a lot of fun, but because they sort of went a little bit ugly in some ways.
But that's sports. Like people, that's why they have a documentary on the Detroit Pistons, the Bad Boy Pistons. Like, it's like people, it captures people. I think you need a villain. Okay. And I think,
are you in for this next year? I mean, if I'm flipping
Caitlin Clark redemption arc next year, I mean, it's inevitable. It's the movie, the script's already written. I think that in order to have that perfect sports story, you have to have a good villain. And that's what Michael Jordan had. And that was a huge part of his rise.
Doug, didn't we learn in The Last Dance that, in fact, Michael Jordan was the villain?
Well, Jerry Krause was the villain in The Last Dance.
Talking that turned out Jordan was doing, right?
Sure. But, I mean, they certainly framed the Pistons in their kind of abusive form of play. Isaiah Thomas, all that. But Angel Reese, what a villain she was. And my hat's off to her. Do I want my child to treat their opponents the way that she did? Absolutely not. And that's what makes her great for women's basketball. I think that without Angel Reese, without LSU's shenanigans in that championship game, are we talking about this is women's basketball on the platform that it's on right now? So, I mean, it had everything. It had the perfect villain. It had the perfect hero. And now Caitlin Clark is kind of viewed as this, like she's a martyr for her team and everyone respects her and hates LSU. And Jill Biden came out and said she wants both teams to come to the White House. which received some major negative feedback from Angel Reese. And it's just like the story is so engaging. It's like, this is why reality TV is a thing. When you have a story, when you have this drama between people, tune in. And when you add sports and competition to the mix and it's all happening in real time, it's that much better. And so, I mean, I still think the WNBA has a huge opportunity. Like, if they can keep this rivalry going between Clark, I mean, even if it's fabricated, like if they can just get them in on it, but if they can keep this rivalry going, I think the amount of interest is so much higher than your typical women's basketball that we've seen. And I'm buying stock. I'm not saying I think it's going to be the NBA, but I'm buying stock because I think it is going up. Price went up, Mike.
I suspect it is, right? And I think over the last couple of years, there has been a concerted effort, particularly from the media partners and some corporate partners, to really push women's basketball at both the professional and the collegiate level. Caitlin Clark, look, I mean, this is one of these things where it's really kind of fascinating to me as an academic, because like I said, she was kind of, the game was delightful, the trash talking was delightful. Is this enough to actually elevate the game going forward? Is this a breakthrough moment, or is this something we forget about? Now but back to Angel Reese. She was the she was the fourth leading scorer on that team. I suspect that's part of the pushback in terms of the trash talking. That this is essentially, I'm trying to think who the fourth leading scorer on the Pistons would have been when Jordan would, but you know what I mean? That's part of the story too. If someone's dropping 30 points on you, it's still kind of dominating the game when you're losing. And again, but
Mike, it's Patrick Beverley. It's Patrick Beverley. He's a scrub. He was in the G League like for more time than he's been in the NBA. Like I think he played for the Shanghai Knights or something. It's Patrick Beverley. And that's what, like, with trash talk, it's like, it doesn't matter. It's so pesky when I'm not going to say a bad player, but a lesser player is the one talking the most trash. And I think that's what made Angel Reese such a villain. By the way, I think she's going to cash out. I don't know, because like maybe brands don't want to associate with the bad guy, but maybe they do in Louisiana. Like, I could see her getting a big payday. LSU's got that gymnast who's made more than any male athlete in college sports. And if I'm Angel Reese, I'm looking at her partnerships and going to them and saying, let's make a deal, because people know her. We're talking about her.
Well, and I will put this out there in terms of NIL. So, fascinating moment, maybe a pivotal moment, an inflection point. But, you know, my point on NIL up until now has been largely that it seems the way it's playing out is male athletes get paid for being in high profile roles and performing. So being the Alabama quarterback and winning a Heisman Trophy will get you paid. Female athletes, it seems to be coming from a very different place. And you mentioned Libby Dunn. She is the greatest example of that, of someone who's famous for doing flips on the beach, builds up that following, and then is allowed to cash in. Frankly, Libby probably would have cashed in anyways, right? So it's not clear to me how...
The Cavender twins,
same thing, right?
I'm piggybacking on what you're saying, but it seems like if they weren't college athletes, they would be influencers anyway, based on the fact that they're making TikTok dances. And it's like they're just kind of the classic influencer, and they just so happen to be an athlete, and they're allowed to be an influencer while they're an athlete. Well, and then they work the two together some, but I don't know how much value they're getting from being an athlete relative to a Stetson Bennett, who otherwise would not be a TikTok star.
But people are surprised by the point I'm putting out there, but they really shouldn't be. Because if you think about who the audience is, I mean, you use the word influence, who these athletes are influencing on both sides. If you're playing quarterback at Alabama, you are influencing college football fans, right? Mm-hmm. If you grow up and you're a gymnast and you do dances and flips, or you're a basketball player, you're twin basketball players, and you have this massive social media following of the young women that follow, that live on TikTok, well, the influence is in different audiences. And so it should come from different places. So for the women's college basketball players, it'll be an interesting thing to watch. Caitlin Clark may be the biggest star in the state of Iowa right now. Mm-hmm. So is she going to collect a lot of local money? Is Angel Reese going to collect more money than the players on that LSU football team? That's a tough one, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. We'll see. I see Caitlin Clark on like Subway commercials. Like, I think she's like the face of women's sports at some point, whether it's now or later.
Doug, I'll say something else about her. On the court, it almost seems like she's got a strange emotional affect, right? But off the court, she's incredibly well-spoken.
She's graceful, yeah.
So I think there's an incredible package there because even, like I said, you did the, again, I don't even know what this stuff means, but big fan.
Big fan of Caitlin Clark. Price went up. That'll be a story to follow next year. And lost in the mix of women's basketball, which like I never thought I would say this, lost in that. And the men's tournament was, I think people kind of have talked about it like it was a snooze fest, like toward the end. Like, yeah, UConn destroyed everybody. But man, that San Diego State Final Four game, San Diego State versus FAU, both teams, like the stakes going to be higher, both teams fighting for something that no one ever thought they could achieve. And seeing Lamont Butler have his Michael Jordan moment, seeing those students in that student section, they've been running these Fandom 101 commercials. They don't need to explain anything. Just show those students when that shot goes in and show the opposing fans when the shot goes in, because absolute mayhem, absolute electricity. That was just pure March Madness. I think that game gave us everything. And in my eyes, like, I don't know that I do know that the NCAA tournament is not a great indicator of who the best team in the country is for a season. It's just a fun mechanism for chaos. And that March Madness game to me was the highlight of March in the men's tournament. And I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. And then as soon as this tournament ends, you turn on SportsCenter and you're like, oh man, we're done with all the excitement. NBA play-ins like next week. NHL's in season,
right?
Yeah. Like NFL draft coming up, MLB season snuck up on us. The sports calendar does not let us down.
Let me say something about that San Diego State crowd, because you sent me that video and I think you're going to put it together on the YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was textbook stuff, right? Because I looked at that and I think, well, no one went to San Diego State to root for the basketball team, right? And so this is a kind of a happy coincidence, right? So the basketball team catches fire. The students there sort of come to it. They gravitate to it because it's something hot on campus, a successful team. And suddenly they're all bonding around that. When you look at that video, most of the guys don't seem to be wearing shirts. And so again, like it's kind of the equivalent of like, you've got some experience of painting up, right? It's like they start to adopt almost like this kind of tribal it's tribal customs of like they are the San Diego State Aztecs, which again, is that a problematic name? Probably going forward.
Everything's a problematic name, Mike.
But and then the complete joy in terms of like they explode into joy simultaneously. It's like that's how fan communities are formed. That group of San Diego State students will be more engaged with the school going forward. They will donate more. They will seek out San Diego State basketball games more than other previous generations or cohorts of students. That is the Fandom 101, and it's the power of fandom, right? That is a unifier, and it was just sort of beautifully illustrated.
Yeah, and I kind of want to see, I might try to solicit some research on this one. I want to see these Cinderella teams, Florida Gulf Coast, like what is the next year change in applications to their school? I mean, Alabama's of course always been a football powerhouse, but when Nick Saban came to Alabama, I remember like hearing that the ACT average was going up at the school, and it's not like people there were getting smarter. It's just that they were attracting more people, and that happens at these schools, but especially for these Cinderella, because in basketball, there's this unique ability to give such a small school such a massive platform. I'm not saying San Diego State is such a small school, but I'm talking about like Florida Gulf Coast and some of these teams over the years. George Mason, does their application rate increase by 25% the next year? Does it double? Like, I have no idea, but I imagine the school is a huge beneficiary from it. And I think that might be part of the reason why some of these schools are investing in sports facilities and in sports. Sports are such a investment, and it doesn't really make sense when you look at attendance and those types of things. But overall, to put the school on the map in that way does provide quite a bit of value.
I can tell you that in some ways, there's not a lot of point to doing the research. People have been looking at that topic for a long time. Mm-hmm. And inevitably, part of the problem, I think, is that a lot of researchers want to find a positive effect of sports, and a lot of research want to find a negative effect of sports. And so body of research tends to be sort of very mixed. Mm-hmm. And it kind of makes sense, right? If you think it all the way through, right? That, yeah, if you are Alabama and suddenly there's this national championship quality team, yeah, application spike. Now, you know what? I mean, strangely, Saban's run might have coincided with when the state of Georgia started to basically give scholarships to all the students to stay in state. Mm-hmm. And now a ton of Georgia students that can't get into UGA go to Alabama, right? Mm-hmm. So it can also be a complicated empirical mm-hmm. problem. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it is, and this is kind of what I suspect happens, that sports only has like a magic when it's really good, right? So if you think it through, like if you're a school and you go from, let's say, winning a 6-6 football program to 8-6, you get nothing. Mm-hmm. But if you go from a school that's 9-3 to a school that's 11-1 or 10-2 to 12-0, then you get something, mm-hmm. right? So that magic only happens at the very top. That's what I suspect is happening.
Yeah, and I have to imagine also like, kind of also countering my point, like for these Cinderella teams, for every George Mason, there's a million.
And you got to remember,
Kennesaw State,
the coach automatically quits, right? And moves up the coaching.
Right. You know? Right. And usually that doesn't take them anywhere, like long term. You don't see them in the Final Four anymore. Shaka Smart.
But you know, Doug, I mean, like a local story here, the state of Georgia has a number of schools that are trying to put themselves on the map through sports. Kennesaw State is one where they want to start playing at the highest level of football. They need to grow their stadium to have, I think they said, 15,000 in attendance, getting to the NCAA tournament. I think those are fascinating case studies to watch play out over the course of the years. Georgia State, I think, moved to the highest division of football here. It's a tough, tough gamble. What a really daunting task. And in fact, it's kind of interesting, right, that they try and do it in the state of Georgia, where I got news for you. There's a lot of people already harvesting the available Georgia talent, right?
Yeah, that's certainly the case. And like I said, for every Florida Atlantic, there's going to be a million Kennesaw States like this year, who maybe if they made it past that first round, maybe they would have had that magical run and maybe their applications would be spiking like crazy and the school's value would be going up. But it's kind of an entry into the lottery. Like if you become a D1 men's program.
Since you grew up in Birmingham, the UAB Blazers seem like they have these occasional tournament runs, right? Do you get a sense that the excitement builds whenever UAB has a nice run, and do kids gravitate towards that school?
Birmingham kids, like UAB, it's kind of got, it draws the elite medical minds, but undergrads, it's not really on people's radar. I was kind of different. I mean, I played basketball, and as a kid, I pulled for UAB. There was a time, a lot of people forget this, there was a time when DeMarcus Cousins was going to go play basketball at UAB. He's from Birmingham kid. He was saying he was going to go there. And until John Calipari got hired at Kentucky, he was going to be a UAB guy. And they had a squad at the time. And I was thinking, this is going to be one of those teams. They're going to make a Final Four. And I wanted to go to UAB at one point as a kid because I was so into their basketball. And they would go on a Sweet 16 run every couple years. Or a round of 32 run every couple of years, Sweet 16 run once that I remember. And it definitely drew interest that I kind of lost when their program took a step back at one point when they had a coaching change and they stopped making the tournament. And so I can say firsthand that I was interested in a school that I otherwise wouldn't have been interested in. And I kind of wanted a reason to justify it. I think that's what we do with mm-hmm. these sports things. Like if UAB had this sports business program or something that I could use to justify like, oh, well, I'm into that. And that's kind of what I want to do. And so, or some kind of production program or something, I probably would have gone that route. And with Georgia, like I look at it and I kind of know the same thing where it's like, yeah, I justified like, well, they've got this good business school and they've got this good like media school, essentially the journalism school. And those are the two things that I want to study. And so I justified it that way. But in reality, if the Georgia Bulldogs football team doesn't exist, like, am I there? Like, I can be honest with myself and say that's a huge part of what had me even looking at those programs in the first place. And so that's how it works in my eyes.
I think you're right, Doug. What is your major point of connection to? My major point of connection to Illinois is there's a football game on every Saturday, and there's a lot of basketball games. And so that is something that, like, I'll always be honest with you, like, I kind of always wonder in a place like Emory how different it is, right? Where you lack that unifier, mm-hmm. right? Because, like, you can bark at you see someone in a Georgia t-shirt at a bar, you can bark at them, right? I can yell ILL, and suddenly we're together as a tribe. A lot of these kind of private schools like Emory, kind of smaller schools, don't have that. And so the bonds have to come from a different place. Now, maybe it washes out, right? Because, I don't know, Illinois has 40,000 undergrads and Georgia has 40,000 undergrads, right? And so it's, these are big, these sports powerhouses are big places. Okay, so the NCAA tournament, the obvious big thing, but you made that point earlier. The sports calendar is always busy. Mm-hmm. We've got MLB starting to go, but it's always fascinating to me. And again, this is one of our themes for the show. The quarterback narratives never end, right? Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers, still absolutely dominating the headlines. Hey, there was a strange clip of Tom Brady playing football on the beach with Gronk, right? The quarterback is the leading man of American sports and maybe of American culture. So we've been continuing to go through the divisions, doing some kind of brief reviews. Today, our topic is the NFC North. So we're talking Kirk Cousins, Jared Goff. What is it? Goff or Joff? Goff. Jared Goff. It is the curse of being a professor, of trying to keep so many names straight. Then we've got Justin Fields, who actually finished fourth. And in the third position, who was the third in that division? It's Aaron Rodgers from the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Aaron Rodgers no longer for the Green Bay Packers.
Not officially, but seems to be. I mean, what's kind of surprising about that? Like, so Aaron Rodgers, we can start there. Aaron Rodgers.
I mean, that's been the big story.
Yeah, is an all-time great and is statistically a phenomenal player. Last year was one of his most disappointing seasons of his career. The Packers seem to have decided to move on to go with Jordan Love. It sounds like Aaron Rodgers is trying to engineer the deal to go to the New York Jets. So again, we have this situation where you're an Aaron Rodgers. All you've got left is to make a pile of money and to build a legacy. Winning a Super Bowl in New York, there's probably few paths to building a legacy better. I mean, maybe winning a Super Bowl in Dallas if that job became available.
Right.
What I think is interesting about the Rodgers story is how quiet it's been. Like, I haven't seen much speculation about what the Packers are trying to extract from the Jets.
All I know is that negotiations are reportedly at a standstill, and I think that Jets fans are going, here we go again. We got our hopes up. When you said winning a Super Bowl in New York, I had to kind of hold back my smirk over here because the thought of the Jets winning a Super Bowl in my lifetime just feels ridiculous. There's no reason that they don't have as good of a chance as any other team as far as like competitive balance in the league. They get a draft pick every year, like they can do it, but it's been so long since that franchise had success and there's been so many disappointments. It's almost like talking about the Cleveland Browns. And so kind of jumped the gun. It sounds like the media jumped the gun with Aaron Rodgers to the Jets. I've heard speculation about the 49ers talking mm-hmm. about, and that was the first team that I thought would be a great fit for him in the sense that they are knocking on the door and they have been for so long. And that is a very good football team. You plugged in a guy like Brock Purdy who had no NFL experience and just about took him to the Super Bowl. And what happens when you plug in a veteran quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, unorthodox guy? I'm not going to say, oh, he's this great leader. It seems to be a different story than Tom Brady or Peyton Manning in that regard, where there always seems to be some kind of disconnect between Rodgers and the rest of the team. It's like he's on a different playing field than they are. But with that said, something's gonna give at some point. I could see this ending in him retiring. I could see the Packers saying, "We're not moving you," and he retires and nobody wins. That would be a very Aaron Rodgers way to go out. But he's been, we always talk about Justin Fields kind of like drama following him wherever he goes. These last couple of years, Aaron Rodgers, and if you go back, I don't know if you remember this, Mike, when Aaron Rodgers was behind Brett Favre, he was stirring the pot a little bit about wanting to get on the field and being frustrated, he's kind of always been disgruntled, even though he's successful. And I see this either ending in Aaron Rodgers retiring disgruntled, or the Packers trading him somewhere he doesn't want to go to spite him. That's genuinely how I see it happening. And I don't know. I don't know who has more power in the situation. I know that he's trying to force them to trade him to a team he wants to play for.
Well, I wonder how much of this is really kind of the curse of the Cleveland Browns have really created some problems in the quarterback market. And so if everyone thinks that they're going to get a couple of high draft picks in addition to taking on a massive salary, that's where the market is at. And if you're Green Bay and you're saying, look, we are the key to the New York Jets winning a Super Bowl, if he's worth a Super Bowl, then he's probably worth two picks and then paying $55 million in the salary. But you know, if you're an NFL capologist and you're looking at this from a dynamic perspective, right, saying it's like, do we really want to hook into a, I don't know how old Rodgers is, 38 or 39, that are we going to hook into $110 or $120 million or $150 million over 3 years potentially and give away multiple first round draft picks? And in the back of the head, it's like, well, we drafted Sam Darnold, and then that didn't work out, and then we drafted Zach Wilson, and that didn't work out, and Rodgers is coming off of a tough year. It's going to be tough to pull that trigger. I mean, and you mentioned San Francisco. Aaron Rodgers is one of my favorite athletes. I'm always so afraid to talk about my favorite athletes because they tend to be the independent thinkers. So it's Aaron Rodgers and Kyrie Irving. And endorsing these guys is just inviting some blowback. I wonder if San Francisco would want to go with an Aaron Rodgers, given some of his controversial positions and how liberal that team tried to move in the post-Kaepernick area. So politics could play a role in some of this as well.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I don't know if there's another team. Like, if I'm the general manager of the Jets, I don't know that I do this. If I'm the general manager of the Titans, maybe, but the general manager for the Niners has seen his team come so close so many times. And it is kind of like a Peyton Manning Denver Broncos situation where it's like, you've got a good defense, you've got a good offensive line, you've got playmakers, you just need a quarterback who can win games. And at the highest level, I'm not saying their guys haven't won games.
If Rodgers is saying he wants New York, does every other general manager go, okay, Aaron has spoken. He's a prickly guy. He can be a difficult guy. I want to let Aaron do what Aaron wants to do. I don't want to inherit a guy that's mad at me because he wanted to play in New York and suddenly we have a deal in San Francisco.
Yeah, I would certainly think along those lines, but also just like prickly guy aside, 38, 39 year old quarterback, $110 million and a couple draft picks, unless it's winning you a Super Bowl, it's not worth it, period. That's my perspective. If you're not willing to roll the dice and you feel like this gives you the best odds you're ever going to have at winning a Super Bowl, you don't make that trade. It's not worth it to win 10 games for 2 years and give up pieces of your future.
No, and again, maybe it is if you're the Jets, right? And you have not been to the Super Bowl since Super Bowl two or three, whatever.
I just think like one of the better Jets teams in my lifetime was actually Brett Favre. I don't know if you remember this, post-retirement Brett Favre. He was on the cover of Madden as a Green Bay Packer, and he played for the Jets that year. They had to print new covers of Madden with Photoshop jerseys on because he hadn't played a game for the Jets yet. And they were competitive. People were talking Super Bowl. They didn't do anything. And that's kind of how I see this going down. If Aaron Rodgers goes, I see it much like the Brett Favre, where it creates some buzz. People start saying, hey, are the Jets legit? and he gets old and retires and they never win anything. And the Jets are back where they started, except they have less draft picks to build from now.
Okay. Looking at the standings for the NFC North, it's an interesting thing. And typically we have gone from the top of the division to the bottom. I think we'll just jump around on this one. It's an odd thing. It's an odd set of standings to look at, where Green Bay actually finished third at 8-9 and the Detroit Lions finished second at 9-8. And you look at the quarterback play of the Detroit Lions, and it was really very good.
Jared Goff.
So he, you know,
turn the corner.
You look at his stats, and they are actually fairly phenomenal. And in particular, I like to talk touchdowns to interceptions, 29 TDs to only 7 interceptions. And so it does appear that he turned the corner, and Detroit kind of turned the corner. It's an interesting place, though, Rick, because that brand is so downtrodden, so beaten down that you look to me, I forget about Detroit. Mm-hmm. I almost just sort of assume, well, Detroit's going to win 4 or 5 games.
And they don't get the primetime spots except for Thanksgiving. Like, I don't see them on TV. So that it makes it easy to forget about them, especially with a guy like Jared Goff. When Stafford was there, Stafford was a number one pick as well. Or I don't know if Goff was one or two or whatever.
He was.
But yeah. But Stafford always had this allure to him. Like, he brought an audience. There was this respect where it was like they have a legitimate top 10, a quarterback who very well would win Super Bowls with any other team. And we saw that in his first year on another team. So I think people kind of respected the Matt Stafford Lions, but Goff seemed like a disappointment in LA. So he seemed like a rehabilitation project. And very rarely, Mike, do we see these rehabilitation quarterbacks actually pan out.
Wasn't it Goff versus Wentz in a Super Bowl? Am I remembering that wrong? Or a late playoff battle?
He played in a Super Bowl. The first article that comes up for Jared Goff's Super Bowl is Jared Goff had the worst game of his life on the biggest stage. So Jared Goff, Pats, Brady.
Okay.
Yeah, that was that Todd Gurley team for the Rams where Gurley got arthritis and was practically, he was like MVP of the NFL, but he practically was unusable in the entire playoff run in the Super Bowl. So tough time for the Rams, but it was also before the Rams totally ruined their uniforms, which I'm still mad about.
An interesting aside on Goff is that when you look at where he's at in terms of his contract, he did a 4-year, $134 million deal. So he got paid. He's an unrestricted free agent after next. I guess he's got 23 and he's got 24. So he's right in the middle of that, but he's probably, you can imagine a scenario where Detroit is going to have to make a decision. Is he their franchise quarterback? And that's an interesting decision for coming out of Detroit. If you're going 9-8 and you're sniffing the playoffs, then do you do a, and again, you go back to what his numbers were, and people are not thinking about Jared Goff as one of the top quarterbacks, but you could imagine him getting a deal that puts him right at the top of the NFL based on last year's production and based on where the Lions are at as a franchise.
If you look at how much Daniel Jones got paid, and his stats are probably about half of that in terms of touchdowns. If Daniel Jones had the season that Jared Goff had last year, I would be thrilled as a Giants fan, and I would be saying 100% franchise quarterback. So I think we've got to see if it was a one and done year. There's been guys over the years who have 1 year like that where you're like, oh, this guy might be a top guy, and then they remember who they are in the next season. And so we'll see what happens this coming year. But I think Jared Goff statistically is like a top 10 guy in 2022, which feels weird to say because, like I said, these rehabilitation quarterbacks, that's like a guy you almost never take. Like, you don't take Sam Darnold on and say, oh, I think this guy's going to turn it around. And Goff kind of had that same feel to him, but he actually turned it around. And so Jared Goff, Matt Stafford, who won that trade, Mike? Or I don't know if it was a trade, but essentially a swap between the Rams, who won a Super Bowl with Stafford, and the Lions, who seem to have found lightning in a bottle with Jared Goff. Was that a win-win?
I think it was a win-win, right? I mean, when you think about where both those franchises were, and look, I don't know what the long-term payoff to winning a Super Bowl in Los Angeles is. Mm-hmm. You might have a better sense in terms of Paul has always struggled in Southern California professional football. Winning a Super Bowl, well, that's the best thing you can do. Now, when you turn around the next year and you have a disastrous season, and I think Baker Mayfield gets some starts for you, I don't know what kind of legacy you build, but if I'm Detroit, I'm absolutely thrilled with how this has turned out. I'm looking ahead to potential playoff runs.
Yeah, and I think Detroit, they got a lot of value out of Matt Stafford, and they let him go at an age where he's likely. We talk about the Ravens and Lamar Jackson and how often do running quarterbacks have their best years ahead of them at this age after this many years of playing. Like Matt Stafford, his best years are likely in the past. And so they move on to a guy whose best years are in front of him. And that's how many teams go just constantly have a quarterback who's in his prime. That's a really good place to be if you're the Lions. And so I think the Lions certainly were a winner. They weren't going to win Super Bowls with Matt Stafford. I think it's a good deal for them. And for the Rams, part of me looks at it and says, A, would they have won? That team was so good. Would they have won a Super Bowl with Stafford or Goff at quarterback? And we'll never know that. But also, like, long term, did giving up a future franchise quarterback cost kind of the reputation of the Rams, where they, like, this year they had such a terrible year? And it's, if it's like that moving forward under Stafford, it's like you gave up your future for one good year in one Super Bowl. But on the flip side to that, the Rams and Chargers are kind of an interesting duo of same city sports teams, because there's always kind of like an alpha team and a beta team, like the Lakers and Clippers, or the Knicks and Nets, or the Giants and Jets. Like, you go across the board, and those teams moved to LA at the same time. The Chargers are the team that have the top five quarterback.
The brighter future, it looks like.
Yeah. Well, they've got the brighter future. They've got the guy. They've got the top quarterback in the city and one of the top quarterbacks in the league, and he's young, and he's going to be, I mean, I think both you and I expect the Chargers to lock him in for the long term sooner rather than later, as they should. And so for the Rams, I actually think, I don't know how much getting Stafford played into this, but winning that Super Bowl, it kind of, my perception is that it established them as the alpha team in Los Angeles. Where the Chargers, even though they're viewed, even though they have the better quarterback, even though they probably have the brighter future, they're viewed like the Clippers. They're like this kind of outsider team, like for people who aren't fans of the mainstream team. And the Rams became that mainstream team with that Super Bowl. And so I do think that it benefited the brand, that it benefited it, particularly in the competitive space that is Los Angeles, where you're trying to get that number one spot. And I think the Rams got it. I don't know if they'll sustain it. The Chargers certainly pose a significant threat with Justin Herbert. And yeah, that's a story for another day. But very interesting swap of quarterbacks between Goff and Stafford. Rarely do we see these trades where it's like, wow, I actually think both teams are better off.
Here's a hot take, Doug. I mean, looking at the, let's say, Detroit being on the upswing and Goff being a couple more years under contract and having, and again, sometimes we see quarterbacks actually improving a lot as they age, right? It's an interesting position, right? Where the game slows down with more reps and more experience. I could imagine a scenario where Detroit, again, think of all these parts as moving. Aaron Rodgers leaving the division. Green Bay perhaps in rebuilding mode. Kirk Cousins continue to just sort of be Kirk Cousins.
Mediocrity.
I mean, above average.
Yeah.
And so you could imagine a scenario where suddenly Detroit has the best quarterback in that division, and maybe they're fighting with the Vikings for the top of that division next year. I'd rather have, I mean, who are you taking? You taking Cousins or Goff?
I'm taking Justin Fields, Mike.
Okay.
I'm messing with you. Okay. I just wanted to bring him in the conversation. But
we'll get to him, right?
I think
it's debatable, right?
It's debatable, yeah. It's especially with Goff being younger. Cousins, it's like he's at his ceiling. And like people forget Cousins had like a fringe MVP season this year. I mean, he played some good football this year and won a lot of football games. And
I've also seen mock drafts where they're talking about Minnesota taking a quarterback. in one of the higher, when, and again, sometimes with guys like Kirk Cousins, you get, maybe there's this tendency to get a little impatient, right? It's like, you know, 'cause remember, he was the first of these kind of big money guaranteed quarterback deals, right? And kind of shocked the world. Now he's done really what he's put the Vikings in great position. But again, it's that fandom purgatory, right? Of you've done well. Does anyone think you're going to get over the hump and start bringing Super Bowls back to Minneapolis?
It's like the Mark Richt thing where, for lack of a better term, where your own success brings about expectations that maybe would not have been realistic without you having that success. Like Richt took over Georgia at a pretty low spot and got them to a consistent 10 win a season type resume. And the fans were sick of it. And I feel like that's Kirk Cousins. Like, what were the Vikings doing before Kirk Cousins? And when did they have a quarterback who was in the running for MVP? When did they have a top receiver in the league in receiving yards? And when were they making runs in the playoffs? Like, of course they didn't this year, but when were they making the playoffs? Like, the Vikings, I think fans get spoiled. I think they get spoiled from what they have because they always want to be improving. And so when someone gives them what they wanted, they say, that's not enough. I want the next thing. And if you go a year or two and you don't give them that next thing, then it's like, all right, bye-bye. Like, give me someone who can. And so I don't think Kirk Cousins is like on the hot seat or anything. But, you know, I think that would be more of like a Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers situation.
I think it's exactly what it is, right? Yeah. This kind of inevitable transition planning, being the responsible kind of GM, bringing in this cost-controlled quarterback. Kirk Cousins, maybe a lack of excitement, a lack of, I don't know, this lack of, for some reason, he's never kind of resonated, I think, as that like truly marquee quarterback, has he? It's always been.
He started to when he put on that chain on the plane and was doing his little dance. He started to feel like, oh, is this guy like an alpha male? Is he the guy? And you like that. That was classic. He's had his moments. Man, if I'm a Vikings fan, I'm all in on Kirk. I think of him like Matt Ryan, and I think the Falcons with a better defense could have won a Super Bowl with Matt Ryan.
I want to drill down on this. You're the Minnesota fan. Kirk Cousins is your guy. I totally get
that. He's my guy. Yep.
He's the guy. He's been successful. We've won games.
You can't get greedy. You can't get
greedy.
What
if someone says no? But fans can, right? If someone sort of taps in the shoulders and says, "But what about if I'd give you Lamar Jackson instead?" Does your loyalty waver quick? And again, it's almost more like a thought experiment.
Sure.
Does your loyalty waver quickly?
I don't. If I'm the Vikings, I don't want Lamar Jackson. I don't want Aaron Rodgers. Straight up.
No, I don't either. No.
I don't. Do you think the diminished, like,
you don't want to have trades within that division.
Well, do you think? I know, but this is of course a thought experiment. Yeah. Do you think the marginal wins they're going to get with Aaron Rodgers is going to be worth giving up a couple years of Kirk Cousins, like, given that Kirk Cousins is younger?
Well, I was looking at
this. Maybe they would win the Super Bowl with Aaron Rodgers.
Kirk Cousins has about 10 years in the league, and I was looking at the contract situation, and it looks like they've been renegotiating his contract to create some essentially cap room for the last couple of years. So Kirk Cousins is listed as an unrestricted free agent in 2024. So, you know, for the Vikings, this, again, it's like with where the quarterback market is, because look, I totally understand like the long-term, sort of the historical perspective is Kirk Cousins is our guy in Minnesota, the guy in that city for a decade potentially. But now with where the quarterback market is, signing these guys suddenly becomes very different, right? Where it's like now these guys are talking about Kirk Cousins, what does he get on his next deal? 150, 175 million is a four-year deal. Does he, depending on how things go with the Lamar Jackson type free agency, does he go out there for this next deal? And you think he's been in the league for 10 years. He'll be coming off of season 11. It might be his last big deal. So Cousins could be an example where the realities of contracts and the quarterback market shift the dynamic, so Minnesota does start to think about what is potentially next.
Yeah, and I think at that point next year, it will be a kind of Lamar Jackson type situation where it's like you look at it a little differently when you're looking at a new contract. And when it's a quarterbacks are tough because they get better as they age to a certain point and then it drops off. And I'm sure you could do some kind of like chart as to where they drop off on average. But Aaron Rodgers, like, do I want to sign Aaron Rodgers to a 5-year deal tomorrow? No. Do I want to Kirk Cousins though? He's like one of the, it's same with Lamar Jackson where you're like, he's still playing at his peak. I mean, Lamar not, but Kirk is, but it's like, how long do you expect that to last? And am I going to pay him like he's going to do that for the next 5 years if I think he's only going to do it for the next year? Or if I think this last year was probably the best year I'll ever have and it's downhill from here. So it becomes more similar to the Lamar Jackson situation in a year who, again, it's that's been quiet, not to get on a tangent, but Lamar Jackson, what's happening with him? It's like a cold war in the NFL right now with Lamar Jackson, Aaron Rodgers. Nothing's really happening, but behind closed doors, there's a war going on and these guys are trying to make moves. I don't know.
And they're thinking about the maybe draft.
I feel like the draft is going to be what triggers some things to finally happen because people are going to want picks and they're going to make moves.
Okay, Doug, the last guy in this division, and I don't even really want to talk about Justin Fields much anymore. I feel like we've kind of, he's this incredibly fascinating player, maybe not so much on the field, but from a media perspective, he's been absolutely fascinating to me for forever. At Georgia, at Ohio State, the pre-draft run-up in Chicago. Statistically, again, it continues to absolutely fascinate me. Some aspects of his game are absolutely terrible. 17 touchdowns, 11 interceptions last year. He's 2 years into the league. We often see a lot of improvement. There's still reason for hope in Chicago. I kind of think the things that they're grasping onto in Chicago, the spectacular running plays, is a little bit of a mistake. But Fields is, the Bears are locked. The Bears, that they've decided to trade away that first pick and not take Bryce Young.
Yeah.
So the Bears, or maybe they didn't receive the right kind of offers for Fields that they thought they could get. Fields is wedded to the Bears, to that general manager, to that coach. It continues to be a story where he'll get a lot of attention, a lot of press. I don't think the Bears are going to win a lot of games.
I don't think they're going to win a lot of games, but I will say I understand why Bears fans still have hope in Justin Fields because I look at what happened. Like, I pegged Fields as a better Jalen Hurts when he was a prospect. I was like, he's like Jalen Hurts, but he's got a better arm. He's faster. He's more accurate. He's more of a quarterback, like he's a more developed quarterback passer. And I look at what happened with Jalen Hurts this year. Going into the season, a guy who we didn't know if he would be a franchise quarterback. And now it seems like he's going to break the bank when his time comes to get paid. And Justin Fields, I don't know if there's any reason to expect him not to take a turn in year three. We saw Trevor Lawrence do it in year two. Fields, this will be his first year of continuity as far as being in the same system. He still has all the tools. To me, like, legitimately, if you go back to the draft where he slipped a little bit, the big knock on him was like his medical stuff, like that he had seizures or had the potential to have seizures or something along those lines. And it was kind of, the thinking was he's a future MVP of the league if he's playing, if his medical issues don't get in the way of him playing, but there's a risk there. And so it's like that hasn't been an issue. Like, there's been nothing permanently damaging to his career, in my opinion. And I just think that, like, you use them the right way and the right, I would want them. I would want, if I'm the Eagles and they're like, oh, we could either re-sign Hurts or Fields, I'd probably take Hurts for his leadership, but I think you could plug Fields right in and be just as successful. I really do. And so it's weird because it's like, I don't love the guy, but I believe in his talent. And we'll see if just raw talent is enough to make a big career as a quarterback or not. And I think he's got to work on some other things, like his body language. I think when things aren't going great, that is a huge red flag to me in a quarterback when they're just mopey. And I see that with Fields a lot, and I don't like that. And that's what you don't see with Jalen Hurts. And so I think he's got things to work on, but the talent is still there. He's still young. He's still malleable. And if I'm that coaching staff, like...
And Doug... This is why I love this guy and I love this conversation. I mean, I like listening to you because you're right. I mean, the physical tools are all there. You mentioned that he has the physical tools to be the MVP of the league. And so it ends up being this, again, he is going to be this absolute lightning rod for as long as he is in Chicago, and in particular until that team turns it around. I can't wait to, and again, it's like sometimes I forget how much in some ways I've been a huge naysayer of Fields, right? But I will always watch a Bears game, and I cannot wait to see what his year three is. He continues to be this absolutely fascinating player to me. I will say one thing from an analytics perspective, because this is something that I've been thinking about for a while. So Fields gained 1,100 yards last year. I'm going to make a confession to you, Doug. I can't figure out how to include rushing yards into quarterback metrics.
It's becoming more important.
Okay.
And like, you know what? Hurts.
I feel like it's becoming more important all the time, right? Mm-hmm. But here's my problem with it, right? So we can look at a quarterback, just like the intuition behind this. And if I tell you a quarterback has 40 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, you know that team won a lot of games, right? You just do, right? Mm-hmm. The correlation is very strong. But if I tell you a team had a quarterback that rushed for 750 yards or 1,000 yards, you have no idea how that team performed.
Yeah.
So to parse out the role of rushing yards on quarterback performance and therefore team performance ends up being essentially impossible, because it seems like sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
That's a really interesting point that I hadn't considered, but Justin Fields is a guy I will say that I think he has the potential to be a pure pocket passer. You take the running ability, like let's say he gets a little bit slower, he gets banged up as his career goes on. I really think he has the potential. And I'll say this, nobody would trade for Justin Fields right now if they could trade the same assets for the number one pick. But with that said, I think if Justin Fields had come out in this year, if he had been in this class with this group of quarterbacks, I think he's the number one pick. I think he would have been the number one with his production in college and his physical attributes, because Bryce Young is right now kind of the guy, and it's like the knock on him is size and his measurables. Fields had largely the same performance in college, and he played incredibly well in the playoff against, I don't know, LSU and against Clemson. And the only knock on him was his physical health. And so I don't know, but I think he might have, I think in this class, he might go number one if he's like in that same class with Bryce Young and Will Levis.
Would you make a wager with me on whether or not Justin Fields throws for 20 touchdown passes next year?
Yeah. Mike, will you buy Justin Fields' jersey if he does?
Okay. No, I mean, again, love the guy. In some ways, the player I'm most fixated on in terms of the modern NFL for a lot of different reasons, the media attention, the physical talent, the style of play.
Spectacular style, yeah, highlights. Yeah.
But, you know, like, again, the highlights of breaking all these rushing records, 1,100 yards for a quarterback, unheard of. But does it translate to being anything that anyone that does it translate to being a successful team? So it's, again, the quarterback position will always excel. And Justin Fields, it seems like he's going to be one of the top 10 guys to watch, even if he's winning 3 games a year for the next several seasons, to see how this whole thing evolves.
Mike, okay, quick thought experiment. You're the Chicago Bears. You get a blank slate, and you can either sign Justin Fields for the next 5 years or Lamar Jackson for the next 5 years.
I take Lamar Jackson.
Oh, wow.
And you know what's funny about it? I think in some ways I'm getting caught up in standard bias in this. You mentioned Fields' body language.
Yeah.
I think that has always been the side of Fields that has pushed me from being a doubter to an extreme doubter. Is it's always seemed like the off the field stuff, the off the field personality stuff, is not what I would want in a my quarterback. And I got
nothing.
I mean, on Jackson, I don't know, maybe something on Lamar Jackson in terms of him not showing up to that playoff game. But in general, if you're paying Lamar Jackson, I get the sense that he's a warrior that's going to go all out for you every down. If you have the relationship with Jackson that is fair on both sides, I don't think he's ever quitting. I haven't seen that from Fields at Georgia or at Ohio State sort of protesting against the COVID lockdown because he wanted to show his dad. That has always been the that has always, I think, been the thing. I don't like him statistically. I don't like rushing quarterbacks, but that has always been the thing that I think, and again, I will fully admit that I could have some sort of bias and I might be over exaggerating the importance of those effects, but it's hard to resist those kind of gut feels. So Lamar Jackson.
All right. There we have it. There we have it.
Okay, everyone. So thanks for listening and we'll be back next week. And as always, more content at www.fandomanalytics.com.